Welcome back to the Ruby Tuesday podcast, the second ever episode of the Ruby Tuesday podcast. I'm Patrick Ruby of Sports on Earth, and every week, I'll let you guess which day, I'll be hosting an in-depth conversation with somebody smart on sports stories and topics that go beyond the field of play. Speaking of which, we're going to talk today about performance-enhancing drugs in sports. That means HGH, fast-acting testosterone creams, bovine bulking agents, female fertility pills, stuff you can get from anti-aging clinics, stuff you can get from Mexican pharmacias. Anything and everything to get an edge. You know, thanks to the ongoing Biogenesis case, which I'm sure most of you listening have been following, and a recent series of high-profile failed doping tests in track and field, PEDs are back in the news. Actually, I'm pretty sure they never left. So joining me today is someone who did leave the PED game, but is still one of the smartest people around when it comes to understanding what's going on with them. Victor Conti is my guest, and in case you don't know, he was a key player in the Balco doping case that exposed PED use by Marion Jones, Barry Bonds, many other athletes. Victor's also someone I profiled a few years back, and I've stayed in touch with. Always enjoy talking to him, and to this day, that's probably one of my favorite stories I've ever written. So Victor, welcome to the podcast. You've been in media demand a lot lately. How's your voice holding up?
It's holding up well, and thank you very much for having me, Patrick. I always enjoy being with you.
Well, let's start with this. You know, I think we are almost, not quite, but almost to the 10-year anniversary of the Balco raid. And now we're all talking about Biogenesis, and we're still talking about PEDs and sports. Should anyone be surprised by this?
You know, some call it the never-ending story. I don't see an end in any place in sight at the moment. And, you know, it really doesn't surprise me that it's now been a decade and this story and this issue is still such an important issue and so much discussed in the world of sport and in society in general.
Would you ever think 10 years ago that it would still be going on, or did you think there would be, I don't know if I want to say more progress, but change, or is the landscape exactly the same, you think, as it was 10 years ago, or have things changed?
I don't think it's exactly the same. You know, early on, I decided that the best thing for me to do was to come forward, admit my wrongdoing, not cooperate and testify against anybody else involved because I was the leader of Balco. And against the advice of my legal counsel, I went forward and was on a 2020 special with Martin Bashir. And basically what I said was, I'm here to tell you that there's no Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, or Tooth Fairy at the elite level of sport. And specifically that in my opinion, that 80% of baseball players were using stimulants and 50% were using anabolic steroids. I don't think many believed me at that time, but here we are a decade later, and I think those percentages may be more accurate than some may have been willing to admit in the past.
Well, it's like you've always said to me, you went from pariah to prophet. I think that's pretty accurate.
You know, it's important that they changed their approach. The anti-doping officials need to understand that it's during the off season, from Olympic sport to professional sport, this is when they're using anabolic steroids and testosterone and other performance enhancing drugs in conjunction with an intensive weight training program, and they develop the strength and speed base that serves them months later at the Olympic Games. I'm talking October, November, December, January timeframe. And then when they compete at the Olympics, you know, 9 months later in August and September, those gains carry over. Right. And so what they do is they announce, you know, as an example in London in 2012, that they're going to conduct 6,000 drug tests. And of course, they catch six people and it's a minuscule amount. Nobody believes that less than 1% of athletes are using PEDs. When, in my opinion, what they should have learned is that you take your resources, and you do less tests, but you do target testing, and you go to these countries, Jamaica, Russia, some of these countries that have recently been in the news, and you catch them when they're actually using the drugs.
As you just said before, when the fish are biting, right? That's when you want to throw your line in the water.
When the fish are biting. And you know, I said this early on, and then I was critical of USADA, and actually in one interview, they went and found the statistics that are published on the USADA website, and I had told them instead of doing, you know, all this in-competition testing, that they should shift and do much more out-of-competition testing. And the amazing part was that before the Olympics, and of course Balco was raided in September 2003, and I met with USADA officials in 2003 and twice and again in 2005. And then in 2007, when they published their testing statistics, they did approximately 1,200 tests in the first quarter, 1,200 in the second quarter, 1,200 in the third quarter. And then during the fourth quarter, when the fish are biting, they reduced it down to 50% and did 600 and some odd tests. Oh. Now this is when, why would they reduce the amount of testing by half instead of increase it? So they clearly weren't listening to what I was saying. And, you know, why was that? You know, were they just, not informed? I don't think so, because I was very clear and high profile in what I was saying to them. Were they enabling, harboring, and promoting the use of drugs in Olympic sport? I mean, these were very serious questions in my mind at the time. Things have improved now. I think they are doing more out-of-competition testing. Mm-hmm. I think they do need to use more CIR, carbon isotope ratio testing, for synthetic testosterone. I do not believe now that you have, everybody's asking, well, what is the new designer steroid? You know, is there undetectable steroids out there now? I don't believe that's the case, and I'd like to take the opportunity to explain why I don't believe that's true.
Well, sure. Let me, for people that maybe don't remember, you know, back with Balco, you know, it was THG. That was kind of the undetectable designer steroid that was being used. And they only really caught on to it because, Trevor Graham, track coach, supposedly brought basically a syringe of it or a needle of it to the testing people and said, this is what you need to be looking for. And they were able to develop a test for it, mm-hmm. and then find it sort of retroactively. They wouldn't have really mm-hmm. known otherwise what they were, because they wouldn't have known what to look for. I think that's probably why, like you said, people out there are like, oh, what's the new designer thing? Because they saw how effective the old designer thing was. But yeah, go ahead. Tell me, why is it that shouldn't be the thing testers are looking for anymore? And what should they be looking for at this point?
Post-Balco, they changed the way they determine a positive drug test for anabolic steroids, including testosterone. There used to be two prongs. It's called the Related Substances Clause.
Okay.
So they had a list of approximately 35 anabolic steroids, and then they would say, and related substances. And the first prong was that it had to be similar in structure to testosterone, the granddaddy of all anabolic hormones or steroids. And the second prong was that there had to be some science showing that it promoted protein synthesis or muscle growth. Mm-hmm. Now, even in the case of the original species of the clear, norbolethone, there was some research from back in the 1960s showing that it did have anabolic effects, but for THG there wasn't. And because of that, they dropped the second prong. So what that means is they can set up and they test and they find something called a mass spectrogram fragmentation pattern. And it has peaks. And testosterone and all other anabolic steroids that are similar in structure have these peaks in a certain range. And so now, and as was the case with THG, they didn't even, when they came and raided Balco and they talked about THG, I said, well, what's THG? I'd never heard that name. You know, we called it, initially it was called New Stuff, or I called it The Clear.
Okay.
And then they explained that it was tetrahydrogesterone and it was a hybrid and right. so on. So what I'm saying is, they, by dropping the second prong, their machines are set up in a way where they can red flag a structure that is similar in structure to testosterone. They can bring doping charges against you, even though this substance has no scientific evidence to prove that it promotes protein synthesis or muscle growth. So it's easier for them to come after you. The one of the steps they had to meet, or the standards they had to meet before, has been removed. So as a result of this, what everybody has done is they go back old school, and they're using endogenous hormones, growth hormone, IGF-1, but more specifically testosterone, and then you have this 4-to-1 TE ratio, where normal is 1-to-1. The best study showed that Asians were 0.76-to-1, and whites were 1.2-to-1, and blacks were 1.3-to-1. But on average, it's 1-to-1. Okay. So of course they have a 2-standard deviation range, and they allow up to 4-to-1. Well, it's very easy, using many different forms of fast-acting testosterone, to time it and to be under that 4-to-1 ratio. So they're just simply flying under the radar. And right. So I've known this for a long time, and I've been harping on this and writing about this, you know, since 2005, and said this in a letter that I wrote to the UK anti-doping in 2008 that went on. Well, in fact, it was before that, in 2007, because I met with Dick Pound, the chairman of WADA, in December of 2007, explaining that really what people are doing now is they've gone old school, and they're using, whether it be gels or creams or microdosing or troches, orals, that they're using fast-acting testosterone, which clears the system in a matter of hours. Right. And by that, I mean is your levels will be down below the allowable limit of 4-to-1 for testosterone, epitestosterone ratio.
So it sounds like, I mean, basically, by the way, you threw a lot of good technical information at me and at listeners here, which is great. It sounds like overall what you're saying is they're almost going to a back-to-the-future approach to get around testing. And that actually makes me want to ask you something, a general question about testing, which is, you know, I saw Bud Selig the other day. He was bragging that baseball had the toughest drug testing in sports. A few weeks ago, Chris Davis of the Baltimore Orioles, he said it's impossible to beat the system. Now, I don't want to single those guys out too much, because lots of people in sports have made similar boasts. But when I do hear things like that, I think of two things. First, I always think of how testing did not catch Lance Armstrong, didn't catch Marion Jones in Sydney. It kind of caught Ryan Braun, but it hasn't caught anybody else from Biogenesis so far. And if some of the leaks around that case are true, it hasn't caught Alex Rodriguez for years. Now, the other thing I always think of is, a few years ago, you told me that doping tests in general are actually IQ tests, that they only catch people who are stupid and lazy. You know, given everything you just sort of broke down, do you still think that's the case?
Well, let me go back and correct something that you said first. You said that other than Ryan Braun, that they hadn't caught anyone else associated with Biogenesis. Bartolo Colon, Melky Cabrera, the player Grandal, I think is how you pronounce his name, from San Diego. So
they did. Those guys actually.
Four players that were tested positive in the year time frame after Ryan Braun test positive are all linked to Biogenesis. Okay. So, you know, I think it could have been bad advice. Mm-hmm. When they make these in a compounded in pharmacy, you know, maybe they got a batch that had a little deviation in the dosage. Maybe they took it too close to the time that they went to the ballpark to be tested. But and secondly, to clarify something, your typical cream is 5% testosterone for men, utilized for TRT, testosterone replacement therapy. And for women, they use 2%. Mm-hmm. In the Balco case, we used a 10% testosterone cream. Biogenesis stepped it up, and they were using a 20% testosterone cream.
That seems really high.
So, you know, this is a higher amount. I'm not so sure that was a smart thing to do. And that is the reason that you have so many of these players. But let's put it in context. I mean, since Ryan Braun tested positive at the beginning of 2012, you've had several MMA fighters. Alistair Overeem is one. You've had two or three boxers, Lamont Peterson and two others test positive. You had Debbie Dunn, the 400-meter runner, test positive, in addition to these other baseball players. So there's been, for sure, more than 10 positives for synthetic testosterone in the last year. So that supports what I'm saying is that they went back to going old school and low-dose testosterone to get the anabolic effects. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I'm sure there's a lot of use of growth hormone and IGF-1, which is really not anabolic. Doesn't make you stronger and faster. It certainly will promote reduce fat, and they use it to accelerate healing of connective tissue, ligament, tendon, and so on. Mm-hmm. But it really doesn't enhance performance, so to speak. So they do it because it prevents protein degradation or the gains that you make during the off season or when you use synthetic testosterone. It helps you maintain those gains for a longer period of time.
So it's almost like a helper substance to the other things you might be taking.
Yeah, it's there's some benefit there, but yeah, there. You mentioned the Lance Armstrong, and this is my opinion. There's a section, I believe, in the 202-page report, USADA report about Lance Armstrong. It's almost a blueprint on how to defeat the testers.
Even now, what he was doing.
There's those 10 pages. I believe it's page 129 through 139. And this is online. It's almost a how to defeat USADA.
Wow.
Now, you know, and they use many different techniques. But here's what we know. During these seven Tour de France victories of Lance Armstrong, they were using, they call it the oil. So you got the clear, the cream, and you know, the oil, olive oil mixed with testosterone and deconate. And they were using a dropper like we did with the clear, and it's sublingual. They would put it under the tongue. They were using this on a daily basis during the tour.
When they're getting tested the most, right?
When they're being tested the most. Now, what does that tell you? What can we deduct from that?
I think that
they're microdosing and they're flying under the radar of the 4-to-1 TE ratio. So if normal's 1-to-1 and they've calculated and they're kicking it up to 3 to 3.5 to 1, and they're just using the TE ratio test, they're using it right under the noses of the testers.
Wow.
So that test is simply inept. It's only going to catch the dumber than dumb, including Ryan Braun and Melky Cabrera and these others that were associated with Biogenesis. Whoever came up with that 20%, they went too far.
Right.
You know, they pushed the limit.
They got greedy.
It was really something that created more risk. And they could have continued likely doing what they were doing if they would have used a 10% instead of a 20% testosterone cream. Or, you know, they were also using these troches, which is like a lifesaver. Surprisingly, these come in, my understanding is, 30 flavors. Do you want cinnamon, bubblegum, lemon,
we've got 30
raspberry?
Flavors.
What would you like? They have about 75 milligrams of testosterone, somewhere between 5 and 10% gets absorbed. Your daily production of a healthy male is about, you know, 8 milligrams. So they find a way to, you know, triple your circulating testosterone level, yet fly under the 4-to-1 TE ratio radar.
Wait, I want to go back to the 30 flavors for a second. So if I want to go, like, look, I'm not in the market to juice myself, but I also don't like needles. Are you saying I could go out there and basically get a lifesaver that tastes like cinnamon? I could.
Yeah, there's a whole list. there's a whole list of flavors, and they make these in these compound pharmacies, and they make a liquid, and then they have these molds, just like a cookie cutter mold, and they will come in either square shapes or just exactly like a Lifesaver little rings. And you can find this online and go take a look at the manufacturer of a troche, and then they just pour it in there, and they wipe off the top, and they let it dry, and then they take the little Lifesavers, and they put them in a little packet just like Lifesavers, and guys are walking around, and when it's time for a little hit of testosterone, they put one in their mouth and put it between their cheek and gum and suck on it.
We've come a long way from flaxseed oil. Let me go back to Biogenesis for a minute, or keep with Biogenesis. It just came out today, actually, that the list of clients, allegedly, this is from a former Biogenesis employee who didn't name names, I should note, but he said the client list included professional tennis and basketball players. Now, people in those sports, and I should say smart people like David Stern, have said in the past that their athletes wouldn't need to use PEDs, that they don't need to get all muscular and bulked up to make tackles or hit more home runs. I think we've talked about this before. I don't think that actually makes any sense, and I say that just by looking at what goes on in the Tour de France. Do you think that notion that tennis and basketball players wouldn't be helped by PEDs is ludicrous, or is there anything to that?
It's very dumb to say that. PEDs work very effectively. They will make basketball players run faster, jump higher, and have more strength in the paint. To say that PEDs wouldn't help a basketball player is simply a dumb thing to say.
What about tennis?
PEDs work very well. So, you know, the testing in the National Basketball League is very weak too. Let me tell you something that I find interesting here. You know how recently I heard this Sports Illustrated published that Tyson Gay, the American record holder in the 100 meters in the United States, went to a doctor in Atlanta and he was taking DHEA.
Right.
And of course this is a testosterone precursor. And if you recall, Rashad Lewis, a couple of years back, a basketball player, I believe at the time he was with the Orlando Magic.
That's right.
He tested positive for DHEA. Do you know that I've now recently learned that the MLB and NFL do not test for DHEA?
I didn't know that. I remember DHEA being like a drug that was being talked about, I believe, in the late 90s. I think I remember reading about like a Newsweek or something. As it was, again, it was sort of in the anti-aging category of drugs, or, you know, weekend warriors who were in their 40s and 50s and needed some sort of pick-me-up.
Well, listen, it's not as, you know, powerful as using testosterone. They, you know, it's a raw material,
right.
And a female's body, in most cases, converts to estrogen and a male to testosterone. And, of course, you have to have an adequate supply to convert from DHEA to androstenedione and then on to testosterone. But I found a reference where the director of science for USADA, Larry Bowers, published a study where they found that the use of DHEA can in fact increase the TE ratio enough to cause a positive drug test.
Wow.
So it's not as strong, and it's because, you know, you use the supply of enzymes available for this conversion up very quickly, so it's certainly not going to be as strong. But could there be some possible benefit there? And the answer is yes, but I find it interesting that Olympic WADA, it's on the WADA prohibited list, and it's on the NBA list, but it's not on the NFL or MLB list.
I mean, there could be a lot of reasons for that. It speaks to, in some ways, the ambiguity of knowing what substances actually are performance enhancing, in what kind of doses, what do you have to pair them with to get the best effect. Like you said, there's that question of how much do these leagues really want to know, how aggressive do they want to be. One thing that I think is interesting that's come out of some of the Biogenesis reporting that speaks to sort of a lack of aggressiveness is the side of it where federal and local law enforcement, they haven't seemed to be all that interested in really investigating this, going after Tony Bosch or really anybody else in the case. Now, this obviously comes after the Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens trials. And those ended in pretty much humiliating whimpers. Now, you were once in the bullseye of a pretty dogged federal investigation. I mean, one that was so dogged, I believe the main investigator later got reprimanded by a federal judge for sort of overstepping his police powers. And that's almost like the exact kind of investigation we're not seeing here. Do you think maybe we've seen the end of the feds and even like, you know, local state police wanting to aggressively pursue sports doping?
You know, I have mixed feelings in my answer to you for that question. I do think in sports, baseball, football, basketball, Olympic sport, where the objective is to hit a ball over a fence or run faster than the guy or swim faster than the guy in the lane next to you, that they need to step up and kind of handle that themselves.
The leagues, you mean.
However, let me say this. In the world of boxing and MMA, where the objective is bodily harm, and knowing how powerful these performance-enhancing drugs are, and there just seems to be nobody that is really taking an interest in outing the fact that these state commissions that do the testing for boxing and MMA, they don't do blood testing. You know, they test before the fight and after the fight, one for recreational, the other for performance purposes. Yes, some fighters out there are using VADA, the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association established by Margaret Goodman. Some have used USADA, but that's my concern, is the health and safety, not only of the athletes that are using the drugs, but the opponents of athletes that are using drugs. I think eventually we're going to have some deaths here. And in that particular area of combat sport, I think there needs to be some investigation there.
So you think actually because of the stakes, or like you said, the stakes are in combat sport are literally can be life and death, that we probably should have some kind of actual police investigation, police presence, not just boxing commissions, whatever tests they do, or not just, you know, any kind of VADA or anything like that, but we should actually have the cops get involved. You think that would be a good idea?
Because there's a serious conflict of interest. The promoters and the state commissions are partners in financial gain.
Right.
So there's a serious conflict of interest that you've got somebody that if the fight gets canceled is not going to get paid.
Right.
So I don't think they should be guarding the hen house.
Right. It's probably like some of the conflicts of interest we've seen with cycling and arguably that we even sometimes see with all the major sports. You know, there's a school of thought, and I subscribe to it at least somewhat, that, you know, positive drug tests are basically nothing but bad PR for these leagues. And maybe it's good PR to have a few of them, but it probably isn't good PR to have too many of them. Do you think that's the case?
Oh, I absolutely think that's the case. And let me talk about something that I think is important, and that is many may not have seen or read this new report that was done by a committee headed up by Dick Pound, who was the original founding chairman of the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, and I communicate routinely with Dick and have had a long history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I initially met with USADA three times, including Rich Young, who was a co-author of the WADA code, and spent hours and hours with him and went over thousands of pages of documents. I did not do this in exchange for leniency. I did it for the right reasons. I also was asked by UKA involving Dwayne Chambers and as a part of them reinstating him, if I would write out every single drug he took, the purpose of the drug, the brand of the drug, the frequency and dosage of the drugs, and turn this information over to them.
So you gave you gave them your playbook, basically.
I gave them the every detail of the how-to, use all the drugs that I use with Dwayne Chambers and Kelly White and other athletes. Now, of course, this was published by BBC Sport and News, and eventually this got on to WADA, and I wrote, you know, what they call Conti's prescription for success. And then the media put pressure on WADA. And then eventually Dick Pound reached out to me and said, "Well, listen, he says he wants to come and educate us, and so I'm gonna give him that opportunity." And they paid for me to go from San Francisco to New York, airfare and hotel, to meet with Dick Pound, and we had a 3.5-hour meeting, and there was another attorney there, and who was scribing everything that was said, and a lot of information was presented. Mm-hmm. Now, this was December the 12th of 2007, and just before he was to step down and the new chairman took over, John Fahey from Australia. And then later, some of the things that I discussed with Dick in terms of specific substances that I knew were being used, designer substances out there, I went back to Dick and an ampule of this got to Dick's office and to the WADA lab bench. And the interesting thing was, at the time, Dick Pound went public and said that he found me to be credible. And he believed that, although many said that, you know, they should have nothing to do with this bad guy, in his opinion, they should take advantage of the opportunity to gather this information that this bad guy had to present.
Well, right, it's like with computers, right? If you want to secure yourself against hacking, go talk to some hackers. Get them to help you.
Well, I think that would be very smart. Of course, that's what I was pitching to Dick. So what happened? Anyway,
how did this play out?
So here's what happened. So John Fahey at the time said, I choose to get my information from medical doctors and not from a convicted felon. So later, when I had additional information that was supportive of what I had said during this meeting on December 12th of 2007 to Dick, I said, and it actually got into his possession, and I said, "Dick, I'd like you to go back now and get the minutes of the meeting that we had, and you will see that what I said then, I'm able to support now with the actual substance that is going to be on a WADA lab bench here shortly." A couple days later, he called me back and he said, "Victor, I'm sorry to inform you, but I've been told that the minutes to our meeting have been destroyed."
Wow. So all that for nothing.
Well, it scared them to death, I'm sure. You know, once they reviewed what I was saying, and let me say that a lot of it had to do with specifics in Jamaica and involving these sprinters.
Right, who we've seen a couple of busts lately. We've seen a couple of failed tests, haven't we?
You've seen 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 recently. So,
what's changed there? Why are we suddenly seeing failed tests?
Well, let me say this. So then Dick came to me before the Olympic Games, and of course, you know, everybody's likely becoming tired of me talking about CIR testing and how important it is and how I believe it's the hugest loophole in all of sports, including Olympic sport. And we set up a project where he asked me to identify 6 Olympic athletes and present, you know, the information that I had as to why I believe these athletes were using synthetic testosterone. And the plan was to go into the ATOM system where they can go back, you know, from world championships and Olympic competitions. They save these samples for up to 8 years.
Right, much like they saved some of Lance.
And the plan was to go back and collect these samples. And as we learned in the Lance Armstrong case, that obviously they've been using CIR almost exclusively, unless they gather some form of intelligence. We can talk about that in a second. But unless you have an elevated TE ratio, they're not going to come in and use that as a confirmatory test, which gives them the strength, greater strength in the case once it gets to an arbitration hearing. They're not using it as a screen case. The one time that I can tell you they did is in the Justin Gatlin case, where they got intelligence. Somebody was tipped off that he was using this, and out of the get-go, they used the CIR, and his TE ratio was actually 0.5 to 1, less testosterone than epitestosterone, but they identified that he did have synthetic testosterone with the CIR method. And of course, we learned later in the Balco grand jury and the testimony there that it was 2 weeks after he had been injected when they did the test and found that he was positive using that method. But anyway, after I gave him all this information and he went and he pitched this to the officials at WADA, they basically told him, we're not going to do that. We don't want to go back and collect these urine samples and test these with CIR and see if there's any positive, you know, synthetic testosterone results. This would be bad for business, and therefore we're instructing everybody not to do this. Now, this new report that came out, and Christy Anayot is one of the committee members who is the head of the Montreal WADA accredited lab, who moved her entire lab in 2010 to Vancouver and did the testing there for the Winter Olympics, and does all the testing, you know, as you know, for Major League Baseball and others. She's a part of this six-member committee, and basically, I will send you a copy of this. He's traveling around at various anti-doping conferences around the world pitching this information, but basically what he's saying, and there are, I believe, 82 different recommendations they make, and number 70 is to increase the amount of carbon isotope ratio testing for synthetic testosterone. But what the gist of the real recommendation is that the officials that run WADA need to stop looking the other way when they get information that could help them to find more positive drug tests and clean up the use of performance-enhancing drug in Olympic sport.
Let me turn to the sort of the other side of, so we've been talking about testing side of it, and like you said, they need to not look the other way, they need to close loopholes, they need to be more aggressive and also smarter in what they're doing. But you know, history has shown us, and maybe this is a result of everything you just talked about, history has shown us that police style investigations have tended to work better. Now, they obviously work best when you are actually the police, when you have search warrants, when you have subpoena power. But you know, Biogenesis is a little bit of an interesting case, because we've seen Major League Baseball used the threat of an expensive lawsuit to get Tony Bosch, reportedly, to get Tony Bosch to talk to their investigators. And reportedly, their investigators have been kind of using police-style tactics to try to get people to talk, to get people to roll on each other, so to speak. I'm just wondering, when we look at sort of the future of a sports war on drugs, do you think we're going to see leagues and bodies, maybe like WADA or the Olympics or whoever it is, turn to like this kind of style of investigation, sort of not quite police, but kind of like a private eye tactics?
Well, as you likely know, Jeff Nowitzki went to Europe and Travis Tygart went with him, and they met with the Interpol and in some of these countries, France and specifically Italy, you know, even with the Jamaicans recently. WADA tipped off the Italian police, who raided their hotel rooms, and they've got substances that they're testing now. So what you're describing is in effect this very minute.
So that might be the new playbook going forward, if you leagues know, are really serious and want to catch people.
You know, the problem with this is, and this is from my own personal experience, is that the investigative group led by Jeff Nowitzki, what you ultimately had was one group of cheaters, the athletes and support personnel, being chased by another group of cheaters, the investigators, the Department of Justice. They were using all sorts of illegal tactics themselves, doing, you know, wiretaps without search warrants, putting things in police reports that were memorandums that were just simply not true, making stuff up. Now, they had this information in emails and other places, but then as in the case when they raided Balco and I talked with them, many things came out in my memorandum of interview that I did not say to them, that were just simply fabricated by Jeff Nowitzki. Now, I've said this in a declaration under penalty of perjury and filed this with a federal court. You don't see them coming after me for perjury.
No.
So, and then later things came out where he was under internal investigation and he had bragged about the money he was going to make from a book deal and movie deals and that money that was confiscated at Greg Anderson, Barry Bonds' trainer's house was missing. Cash dollars were taken by IRS agents. Nowitzki et al.
I mean, that's it's, you know, it's almost sounds a little bit like the actual war on drugs, where one of the casualties has been people's civil rights, constitutional rights. Like you said, I mean, it seems like when law enforcement gets pulled into these things, they end up playing on the other side of the law as well. And I don't know if that's good for anybody. Let me ask you a philosophical question. The more I've learned about this over the years, and the more I've thought about it, I mean, athletes are hyper-competitive people. They're trying to do superhuman things for giant piles of money. And on top of that, all of us who are sports fans, we kind of want them to do superhuman things. It's entertaining. I mean, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa was thrilling. I remember being a little kid and seeing Ben Johnson in Seoul. That's maybe the most impressive thing to this day I've ever seen in sports, even though he was doped up. Even if you put in all this testing and police work and suspensions and all these and deterrence even, it seems to me like there's always going to be so much incentive to use PEDs because the whole point of sports is performance. And I've started to wonder, and I'm wondering if you think there's merit to this, that maybe in trying to prohibit these drugs, we're actually wasting our time, creating problems for ourselves, and fighting a battle that maybe we shouldn't be trying to win.
Well, first of all, the objective is to win. And what we have is cheating to win. And not only by the athletes, but by law enforcement and the legal system who's attempting to regulate it. However, the core problem, in my opinion, is the mentality of the athlete, the use or lose mentality. They don't believe the testing is effective. Therefore, they believe that the other guys doing it and circumventing the testing, they want to be on a level playing field. So they feel that they have to do what they have to do in order to be competitive. I believe you can significantly improve the effectiveness of the testing. That's what we've been talking about here earlier. That's why I'm harping on CIR. And I explained to you why they're not using designer steroids, and you've kind of pigeonholed now. This is where they're going, and guess what? We can carve a peg to plug the dimensions of that hole. Let's do it. And money is available from baseball and football and these other sports that are they're making enormous
So
money.
you sound more
And I think,
optimistic than I am.
well, I believe that if the athlete believes you're gonna get busted, at the end of the day, is it worth it to Marion Jones, who lost all of her medals, all of her accomplishments were erased, okay? She won the 100 meters in Sydney by 4 meters. I believe every single other female that was in that race was on drugs as well. I think she could have probably won the race clean. But now she has nothing. So it's all, in retrospect here, but all I'm saying is if you thought you were able to compete on a level playing field, would you take the risk and would you cheat? I think the incentive would be far less to do so. So I'm still optimistic that as an example, I've been pitching this for a long time, the carbon isotope ratio testing, saying that people are using these delivery systems, putting a pellet in your butt and at time releases and these troches and the creams and gels and so on. And then immediately when VADA starts doing the testing, this first or second fight that they did, bingo, Lamont Peterson busted. That listen, this does work. This is the loophole. Pay attention to it. There is an answer, and it's a long time coming. Now, when I criticized baseball when Melky Cabrera came out, and it was on a Monday, and I went to Comcast here in San Francisco, and on Tuesday I interviewed with Bob Lee on ESPN Outside the Lines, and I said, "Listen, expect more. There's going to be more and more and more because this loophole is where this is the barn door that's open." This is how they're going in and out. And of course, the following day, the A's pitcher Bartolo Colon tested positive. Well, both connected with biogenesis, of course. Well, then they come out and say, geez, this guy's scary. He said this was going to happen and it took less than 24 hours, and we had another one. Well, then baseball said that, I said publicly, I believe they're doing less than 5%, and likely less than 1% of samples are being tested using the CIR method. And then they came back and responded to what I said by saying, well, we're gonna check the standard deviation, and if it's plus or minus greater than a given percentage, I can tell you the Olympics use 30%. Mm-hmm. So if you're greater than 1.3 and your baseline is 1, that may trigger them to do CIR testing. But they said they would do more CIR testing but weren't specific about it. Well, recently, because I continue to criticize them, they came out and have now acknowledged that they're testing 10% of the urine samples collected in Major League Baseball using the carbon isotope ratio method.
So
I believe it needs to be significantly more than that. But the point is, it is improving, and you do see that more athletes are getting caught, whether they're using non-analytical type evidence collected here in the Biogenesis case, or like I just mentioned previously, there's been more than a dozen positive for synthetic testosterone in the last year.
So it sounds to me like not only are you more optimistic than I am, but you have some pretty good reasons, it sounds like. I got to ask you a last question here, so we're a little over on time. Again, this is more of a sort of big picture question. Now, it's a cultural question, really. I think it's a little ironic that Biogenesis is at least tabs itself as an anti-aging clinic. And we saw the doctor that was linked to Tyson Gay the other week, also an anti-aging doctor. Now, I say this because there are a lot of anti-aging clinics out there, and as the baby boomers get older, there's going to be a lot more of them. And they're going to be prescribing all kinds of hormones and treatments that would get you busted in sports, basically. And I think of those ads we see on TV for low T. Do you have low T? And basically, they want to give you the cream. I mean,
yeah.
you could be on there as a spokesman for not for low T necessarily, but for the cure for low T. Then we've got Adderall. We've got modafinil. Athletes are getting busted for them, and a lot of evidence suggests that students and even young working professionals are using these as academic and office PEDs. So I guess what I'm saying and what I meant by irony is that I think we're kind of a PED-loving society, and I think that goes all the way to our mass consumption of Starbucks. Do you think we hold athletes to a completely different standard than ourselves? And how long do you think that can last?
I do. What you just said is we are now living in a pharmacologically enhanced society, and I agree with you. And when you talk about these recent anti-aging and longevity clinics, the cream that was used in the Balco case, I got that from an anti-aging doctor who had an office in Texas and another office in Beverly Hills, and many A-team actors at the time, including Mickey O'Rourke and Sylvester Stallone and Chuck Norris and on and on and on, were getting this cream from the same doctor that I was getting it from.
Wow.
So it's been around for a long time. Oliver Stone, the director, was one of his clients. This all mm-hmm. came out. I'm not sure if Chuck Norris is the right name. Maybe Elliot Almond, a reporter for the San Jose Mercury at the time, did a story on this. And there was a whole list of these these actors. And
we saw that with the stuff in New York. We saw in New York. There were rappers that were doing, PEDs.
So my answer is yes. That I believe, and I personally used TRT, injectable testosterone, I'd never taken it in my life until I was 46. And from 46 until 53 for 7 years, I used it. I believe it enhanced the quality of my life. I went from 209 to 192 and lost a lot of body fat and gained a lot of lean muscle mass. And my energy was high. My libido was high. It was almost recreational. I felt great. So I had a great experience using testosterone. I did not use real high dosages like some of the pro bodybuilders do.
Mm-hmm.
I was using low doses, but I personally had a very good experience using testosterone. So understand that I'm not against the use, the appropriate and medically supervised use of PEDs. I'm against the abuse because, in a word, we'd learned back in college in the late 60s that our health ed instructor said that it was a good thing to drink a glass of red wine with your dinner. And it helped to you to relax, and the enzymes were activated, and you got better absorption, And so I agree with that. That doesn't mean I think you should be drinking a gallon of wine a day.
Right. There's a big difference. That makes a
It's
lot
a
of
big
sense.
difference. And so I think that's the what we're going through now is that you're bombarded on the radio, on television. When the Giants went to the World Series a couple years back, I'll never forget during the playoff game with the Phillies, and here comes this commercial on Fox television that, are you a shadow of your former self? You know, would you like to have this and this and that? I'm like, oh my God, they're marketing to the fans of Major League Baseball here, yet, you know, there's a vicious attack upon the players for doing what they are offering here to the fans.
Right. It's exactly my point. I mean, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance there. And I think, like I said, I think going forward, there's probably a lot for us as a society to figure out just where we want to draw those lines. Well, look, we're out of time here, Victor. This has been an awesome discussion. Really glad to have you on. I'd love to have you on again. Let me ask, how can people follow you on Twitter?
My name, Victor Conti.
That's it? There's no underscore or anything like that?
Nope, it's just at simple, Victor Conti, no spaces.
Well, terrific. Look, anyone's listening, definitely follow Victor. I do, and if you want to get good, insightful commentary on everything that's going on with PEDs and sports, he definitely provides that. For now, I'm Patrick Ruby with Sports on Earth, saying goodbye, Ruby Tuesday.